Hello, I'm Javier Fernandez.
Hey, this is Ashley Wagner.
Hi, I'm Gabrielle Damon.
Hi, this is Mariah Nagasu.
Hey guys, it's Christy Yamaguchi here, and you are listening to Ice Talk.
We are fresh off Olympic qualifying at Nebelhorn Trophy last weekend in Germany. A total of 23 spots were given out in the four disciplines to complete the picture for the Olympics in February. This is episode 44 of Ice Talk. I'm Jackie Wong of rockerskating.com. We are just over 4 months away from the Olympic Games, and there's so much that is about to happen this season. Today, I have NBC Olympics' Nick Zaccardi joining me to talk about Nebelhorn last weekend and Finlandia Trophy and Japan Open this weekend. And speaking of Finlandia Trophy, Adam Rippon will be returning to competition this week in Espoo, Finland. I'll have him on later on in the episode. Well, I'm happy to have Nick Zaccardi from NBC Olympics back on the podcast. This is not the first time Nick and I have been on the podcast together. Listeners to Ice Talk will know that we were with Nick McCarville on the Facebook Live edition of Ice Talk back in May for the season wrap-up. Welcome back, Nick.
Hey, thank you for having me back. How are you doing?
I'm good. Well, I mean, for those who follow your reporting on NBC Olympics, they know that you are quite the Renaissance man when it comes to sports, and a busy Renaissance man at that. You are currently in Montreal for the World Gymnastics Championships this week. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Here for qualifying portion of it. This is the world's after the Olympics, so no team event, but still pretty cool to have it so close to the States.
Yeah, there's a fairly healthy overlap of figure skating fans and gymnastics fans. So from your perspective, how do gymnastics competitions and figure skating competitions differ?
Well, I can tell you how they're the same. That the Japanese media contingent is pretty large at both of them. As far as how they differ, I guess a little bit less interest in music and costumes in gymnastics. So there is still a little bit, especially on floor exercise with the women. But overall, a few less controversies in gymnastics over the last, couple of decades in figure skating, though they have also had their share.
Well, the big controversy with gymnastics was, 2004 with the Paul Hamm incident, and that turned gymnastics kind of a bit on its head. Was it 2004? I think it was 2004.
Yeah, Athens 2004, the high bar final.
Yeah.
Alexei Nemov. That's pretty crazy.
Well, I know you're running around over there, so I'm going to cut right to the chase. We just had Nebelhorn Trophy, the second and final Olympic qualification event for figure skating for the Olympics. Of course, the majority of the spots were given out last season at the World Championships, but there were a number of spots that were still available for countries that didn't qualify at Worlds. So I know you and lots of people had your eye on Ryom and Kim from North Korea. So tell me about the importance of North Korean qualification to the Olympics.
Yeah, if you read our coverage, and there's some coverage in the New York Times as well, that seemed to be the biggest storyline at that event, at least for the more traditional media. Obviously, ardent figure skating fans had a lot to follow there. But the North Korean pair was something that we were really looking forward to, obviously, with the Olympics being where they are, whether or not we see North Korean athletes at those games, given the political climate as well, is a very big deal. And there were zero North Korean athletes in Sochi. I'm not sure if they even qualified any or they just didn't get anybody there under the way the rules work for any sport. And there were only two in Vancouver. So there's very much a question of whether or not we're going to see any North Koreans in Pyeongchang. And even if, we've got some qualified now, but we still don't know if they're going to be there. So it's a pretty interesting situation. And most of all for the athletes, you hope that nothing gets in the way, but you fear that it might.
I had Lynn Rutherford on the podcast last week, and she was mentioning that there might be even a cross-country skier from North Korea that might be qualifying for the Olympics as well. So, I mean, when you have the New York Times covering Nebelhorn Trophy, there's something there. And North Korea has certainly invested a good bit, I think, on making them a world-class pair team. I know you've been following them, especially since the World Championships last week. Have you had a chance to dig in any deeper on Ryom and Kim?
That's a question. At World, I was trying to see if I could get some questions into them, and I thought I might be able to. But at the last minute, potential interview, though I wasn't there on site, but I had somebody there who could have helped me with an interview, but at the last minute, it kind of fell through. But in the week before the competition in Oberstdorf, I was able to talk to the choreographer, Julie Marcotte, from Canada, who choreographed the free skate, actually just the free skate for this season. So I talked to her a little bit. That's as close as I've gotten to the pair. Myself and other journalists have reached out to North Korea's National Olympic Committee in the past. I've never gotten any response from them, not that I was expecting one, but I at least got a little bit of a sense of them talking to Julie.
Very cool. What did you learn from Julie?
What I learned most about the North Korean pair is how hungry driven they are. I mean, they reached out to the Canadians, or at least somebody from North Korea did, the Marcottes, to come over there to train over the summer. And Julie just talked about how incredibly driven they were to reach their goal of making the Olympics. They worked right on the ice there with Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford. And if you've seen Megan on Twitter, she's always praising them. So they obviously left an impression on them, even if there is that language barrier. Julie could not have been more effusive about how they were to work with.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, for me, Ryom and Kim have really improved leaps and bounds since the first time I saw them back in 2015. I remember watching them skate at Asian Winter Games, and I think definitely at Worlds last season, and just like doing a double take because it just looked like a completely different pair. And to your point of them being just hungry and ready to go and wanting to qualify, it's very much showing up there. But let me switch over to this week's events. It's going to be another doubleheader with Finlandia Trophy and Japan Open. But I'll start with Finlandia Trophy while you've got some gymnastics applause in your background. One of the more intriguing storylines there will be 2016 U.S. champion Adam Rippon. It's going to be his first international competition since he broke his foot mid last season. And you had a chance to talk to him at the Team USA Media Summit. What were your impressions of him?
Yeah, I talked to him back, late last winter about it when he was first coming back. And he talked a little bit more about it at the time, how he actually was out for 16 weeks, he said, off the ice. When he was the initial prognosis was hopefully only 8 weeks off. So he was actually wondering at that time, oh, maybe I should have gotten surgery. Instead of trying to let it heal on its own, he was really concerned. But I talked to him a little bit about coming back at Finlandia here, and he mentioned a couple things. First of all, he's planning to do the quad lessons programs, not quite ready to do the quad toe in it yet, which, if you remember, Nathan Chen's first event this season also kind of similarly eased his way in. So maybe that's kind of what we're seeing from Rafael Artumian skaters this season. So look for that kind of ease in for Adam in his first event.
Yeah, I also wouldn't be surprised if the reason for not having the toe back is because he broke his left foot, which is the tap-in foot for his quad toe. So would not be surprised if that's the reason they're just kind of taking it easy on too many reps on that foot because of the injury. But he competed earlier in the preseason at a club competition, and as far as I know, skated very well there, more or less clean, but no quad at that point. So that will be an interesting one to follow. The men's competition should be really fun to watch. In addition to Rippon, there's Bo-Yang Jin, Vincent Zhou, Ross Miner, and Mikhail Koyada all will be there. I will be interested to see how Vincent Zhou's senior international debut is going to go, especially against the quality of skaters that there are at Finlandia. What did you hear from Zhou at the media summit?
I actually didn't talk to Zhou at all at the media summit. He did have a big media gaggle around him, and he looked to be a little bit comfortable with that, which is, like, I suppose, a good thing if you can glean anything off that. Going to his first senior international season, he's got some sponsors now. Yeah, I'm also really interested to see what we get from him. I think it's looking like maybe a four-man race for three spots, or maybe three-man race for two spots if you're already assuming Nathan's going to get one. And you've got two of them going right here in this event, their first one of the season, Adam and Vincent. So it'll be a good barometer. Same judging panel for them. We can kind of get an early look at it.
Well, let's switch over to the women. What are you expecting to see there?
Paulina Edmonds is going to be an interesting one to kind of see in her first event this year. First event in almost 2 years, if I have it right. As I talk about the men, you know, maybe four guys, three the women, it seems incredibly wide open right now. I think anybody has the opportunity to go out there and take it. So let's see how ready Paulina is. She's had the injuries. She's had school. She's maybe had more to deal with than any U.S. woman in the last, you know, year and a half dealing with outside of actually competing. So I'm very interested to see what we're going to get from her. It's really up in the air. We have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, her first big competition since 2016 U.S. Championships. So it's been a long time coming with the injuries that she's been dealing with. She was at a club competition a few weeks ago, and we know she got some of her jumps back, but she wasn't anywhere near her top form there yet. But incidentally, she just posted a couple of clips on her Instagram story of a triple left and a triple flip. So you have to imagine she wants to have a solid showing there, and she kind of wants to show everybody that she's got the potential to get on that Olympic team once again. We've also have Gabby Dalman, Carolina Kostner, Maria Sotskova, Elizaveta Tukhtamusheva, and Angela Wang of the U.S., who's had a very strong preseason and is a bit of a sleeper. So it's going to be a pretty interesting set of storylines there. Any of the international women that you are looking at there, Nick?
Yeah, I think it starts with Gabby Dalman. Let's see how she follows up on last season. Sargate that surprise bronze medal. Can she keep momentum going? See how she looks now compared to the end of last year. Any sort of changes? I won't say sophomore slump because she's been around for a while. But how does she handle the kind of increased attention that she's going to be getting?
Mm-hmm. We saw Caitlin Osman have her debut a couple weeks ago at Autumn Classic. So she did pretty well there, and you would think that Gabby Dalman will want to kind of follow suit and make sure that she's not getting left behind in the Canadian realm of things. A few thousand miles away will be Japan Open, and before the Challenger Series became as big as it is this season, Japan Open served sort of as the unofficial start to the international season, and every year, some of the biggest names would be there to compete in that kind of pro-am, free skate only competition. And once again this year, we have another set of huge names, and we really won't see this kind of depth until the Grand Prix final. So let's start with the women this time. What are you most excited to see?
I think that the women's event is the showstopper here. You've got Medvedeva, you've got Zagitova, you've got Marin Honda, Karen Chen. I mean, these are the heavy hitters here. And this is the first we're going to be able to see, you know, Medvedeva, Zagitova, and Honda specifically all in the same events. These seem to be, if anybody's going to challenge it any of this season, it's going to be one of the two first-year seniors, I think, Zagitova and Honda. So, like you said, it's only an exhibition, only free skate. But, I mean, looking at some of the results in the past and seeing some of the results in the past, it's kind of been pretty telling at how seasons end up going. Medvedeva's had the highest score here. Shoot Gracie Gold with six out of six skaters, and you saw that in that season. So you can definitely take a little out of this, I feel like.
Yeah, and add to that, you've got Mai Mihara and Mirai Nagasu all there. I mean, the six women there are going to be, that's going to be a pretty intense showdown. All of them, incidentally, have already competed on the Challenger Series this season, so they won't be skating fresh here. They're actually coming in with a little bit of experience under them. Karen Chen, incidentally, was actually just at a club competition over the weekend and skated against Ashley Wagner, and it was a very close one there. Ashley had won the free skate and won overall by about four or five points, I think. So it was they both skated generally pretty well. So be great to see what Karen has to offer against this group of skaters. Anything else you're looking forward to with the women? Anything with Mirai's triple axel, perhaps?
Well, I think most of all for the women, the other thing I'm looking at is specifically how they are going to perform in what I'm assuming will be a large, boisterous crowd in Japan, and specifically Zagitova and Honda in that sort of crowd on the senior international stage. It's a lot different from the Challenger Series event. And you mentioned Nagasu and Mai Nihara. I shouldn't have neglected to mention them. Obviously, Mirai. We saw her come very close to getting that triple axel clean in Salt Lake City. Can she do better on the senior international level outside of the U.S.? Let's see how she performs with it there. So I think there's definitely questions to be answered.
Yeah, for me, if Mirai can notch another win over Karen Chen in the kind of the lead up to the U.S. championships, I think this would be a really quite a statement from her heading into the Grand Prix series, and it's got to give her a good amount of confidence going into that. So it'll be interesting to see where all of that goes. But on to the men, I would actually say yes, the ladies have six really strong skaters and a big showdown. But I would actually say that the men, we've got some quite the matchup coming up as well. But we had Yuzuru Hanyu and Javier Fernandez facing off a couple weeks ago at Autumn Classic, and now we've got Fernandez facing off against Nathan Chen and Shoma Uno. Thoughts on that one?
Yeah, of the men, I think you have to look at Shoma Uno first and foremost. We saw Shoma, Javi, and Nathan all in their senior B openers already, and without a doubt, Shoma was the most impressive. And I feel like it's looking like him and Yuzu right now, even though, Javi beat Yuzu in Montreal, and that's certainly a big deal. Shoma, I feel like, is the guy with the highest ceiling at this point.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see the four that we mentioned here, Hanyu, Fernandez, Chen, and Uno, all have a little bit different start to their season. Of course, Shoma Uno at Lombardia had that amazing two programs that, like, for the beginning of the season, actually really for any point of the season, those are really incredible skates. Javi and Yuzuru both with strong short programs, mistakes in the free skate, and then Nathan Chen with a little bit of a different approach in terms of kind of scaling back the jumps and sort of taking a more gradual approach to the season. So I'm especially intrigued to see what kinds of technical elements Nathan brings out, especially in light of the fact that he's going to be going up against the likes of Javi and Shoma. What do you think of Javier Fernandez at Autumn Classic, and where do you think he's going to fit in here with those three?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like Javi is maybe the steadiest of these three guys. He certainly has the experience. So I'm not really sure what to expect from him here as far as if he's going to be changing anything, doing anything different. I think the bigger question mark, like you said, is Nathan. But I expect Javi to be solid Javi. He'll probably have a mistake here or there, get things worked out early in the season. But I wouldn't put too much emphasis on what he does here, just because we've seen him for so long.
We've seen him for so long. I mean, this is his like fifth or sixth Japan Open too, so he's very, very, very much familiar with this event. I think for someone like Nathan, this is the first time he's been on this kind of spotlight in Japan this early in the season. So will be fun to watch, but I know I'm running out of time with you. It's like the clock is about to strike at any point now, but before we finish up here, I wanted to look ahead to the next 4 months on the road to Pyeongchang. What do you have your eye on this season?
My two biggest things I have my eye on, and they're both in single skating, I'm sorry, the pairs and bands. One, is the women internationally. Will anybody catch Medvedeva? Will it be Zagitova? Will it be Marin Honda? Or could one of the surprises from last season, Gabby Dalman, Kaylin Osmond, Karen Chen, can they do it? Or do we see Medvedeva complete this kind of historic run that we haven't seen since Katarina Witt and go undefeated for two straight years? So that's, and Japan Open kind of really is the start of all this, seeing all the big guns like that right there. And then the second one is the fight for the U.S. Olympic spot, which is almost going to be a season-long competition, which kind of makes it a little more interesting to me than just focusing on, you know, who wins Olympic medals, specifically the U.S. men, where you've got Nathan Chan, Vincent Zhou, two guys who can go out there and fill a lot of quads. You also have Jason Brown, a guy who's finished fourth in Worlds. You've got Adam Rippon, who's been there for a while, chasing his first Olympic berth, and how great of a story would that be if he can finally make an Olympic team. So those two things I'm looking forward to the most. What about you?
I mean, I'm looking forward to just watching a whole lot of skating, but
aren't you always?
It's going to be a roller coaster for sure. And well, folks, if you don't follow him on Twitter, definitely do so. Nick is at NZaccardi, and follow him, and you're definitely going to be totally up to speed on everything Olympics thanks to him. And thanks to you, Nick, for being on Ice Talk today.
Thank you, Jackie. I'll talk to you soon.
No stranger to Ice Talk, and he is back and ready to get this season started. I am talking about 2016 U.S. champion Adam Rippon, who, as we record this, is getting ready to fly out to Finlandia Trophy. Adam, lovely to have you on the podcast.
Oh, it's lovely to be here again.
I understand you were just having a costume fitting. How did that go?
Oh, it went well. I fit into it, which was, you know, sometimes that's the biggest hurdle to get over. So I have a costume and I fit into it.
I'm glad I don't have costumes for my daily work. So that works. I wanted to start with the question that is on everyone's mind. How is your foot doing?
You know, I'll be honest with you. My foot feels really good. The only thing that I really have trouble with is doing toes. It's my left foot that I broke, and I jump counterclockwise. So my left foot is the one that, like, toes into the ice.
Yep.
For a toe. And doing, like, combination jumps, I don't have any pain. But it's when I, like, practice the toe on its own separately is when I still have a little bit of pain, but I'm doing my best in practice to kind of, like, start to, like, you know, I'm watching how many repetitions I'm doing so that I can stay healthy. And other than that, like, I'm really not struggling, and I do feel, like, at 100%.
Yeah. That's good to hear. I've noticed a few triple loops that you've posted on Instagram. Was that the result of the injury and not being able to train the triple toe, or just something you're playing with?
At first it was a result of the injury. I was just trying to do things that I could gain more strength and still work on stamina. So I was doing combos in a program, and then, it started turning into a strategy so that, as someone who is not trying multiple quad jumps in a program, you know, trying to max out points on different triples so I can do two triple combos, and kind of open jump spots up for a few extra points here or there.
Yeah.
You know, every point counts.
Yeah, the loop will get you that extra point for sure. Take me back to January when the injury happened. You had been at the Grand Prix Final just a few weeks before that, and you were getting ready for the U.S. Championships. What happened and what went through your mind?
Boy, when was the last time we talked?
We talked.
Was this before, like in the summer last year or something?
No, we talked in the summer this year. Or are you talking about Ice Talk?
Ice Talk.
You were talking to Nick McCarville last time, and it was definitely in the fall last year.
Okay, all right. So I guess let's recap, Jackie. Let's go back. So I was training, everything was going well. I got back from the Grand Prix Final and I had not really skated that great. So I was like, you know what? I got that out of my system. I can refocus, get ready for the U.S. Championships. I went home, put my head down, and just started working. And I was skating really, really well. I was doing, like, quad lutzes and quad toes in my long program, and I was like, I'm amazing. And then the day before I broke my foot, I was getting monitored, and I remember that after I was done getting monitored, someone came up to me and they're like, you look great. Like, don't get hurt, stay healthy. And I was like, perfect. I can do that. And then the next day I got to the rink. I was warming up. The Zamboni came onto the ice, and then Raphael came over to me, asked me how I was doing. I said I was doing really well. Felt good. It was a Friday. He put his arm out, and I did a little 2-foot jump and put my hand on his arm to like push up off of it, and got a little extra lift, came down on the side of my foot, and I heard this crack, and I was like, okay, this is either one of those things where like my foot is broken or I'm fine. And I looked down, and my ankle was the size of my thigh. And I was like, oh, well, that can't be good. I tried to do like a few steps. I couldn't walk on it immediately. And I was like, I broke my ankle. Fast forward to a little bit later that day, I got an x-ray, and they were like, no, you just sprained your ankle really badly. And I was like, can you please do another x-ray on my foot? Because like, I heard this crack, and they're like, okay, well, we can do that. So I'm so glad they did, because it showed that I had broken the fifth metatarsal. And that was the crack that I felt. That was the pain that I had through the foot. And, I initially thought I broke my ankle because it was so big, but I had just, had a really, really severe sprain. Mm. So I was given I was told that I would only need 8 weeks off the ice. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Like, I can, you know, start focusing on next year. And to be honest, I even remember sitting down at the rink with my foot broken before I had even gone to the hospital. And I was like, you know what? This is going to be my comeback story. I am going to be fine. I have a full year to prepare for the Olympics, which isn't what everybody else has. I have a full year to prepare for the U.S. Championships. I can do this. And so, you know, I never lost that faith in myself or that belief that I could make it happen. There were definitely a lot of challenging days, like when I got an x-ray 8 weeks in and they said that I needed to do 4 more weeks. Mm. And then I did another one 4 more weeks after that, and they said I would need 4 more weeks. So instead of 8 weeks, I was off the ice for 16. And then, you know, before you know it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting back onto the ice in like April, May. But I was really fortunate for the team that I had, because as soon as I broke my ankle, I decided I was going to move out to Colorado Springs for a few months and do all of my rehab out there. That Olympic Training Center in the Springs is just made for athletes. It's just amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to go out there. And you know what? They just kept me in the mindset. Even though I was only in a boot, they just had me in the gym for hours doing a bunch of, you know, band work exercises, and they just had me still feeling like I was an athlete and still felt like I was training, which I'm incredibly fortunate for, because I never lost my sense of purpose as an athlete, which I think having an injury, you can sometimes lose that purpose of like, what am I doing? I'm just sitting around. I was out there for about 6 months. I came back to California in June. But I was really fortunate because I was able to start getting back onto the ice in Colorado. So by the time I came back to California in June, my goal was to come back and not feel like I was behind everybody else and still feel like I was part of that group that was training with, you know, Ashley and Nathan and Mariah. And when I did, I felt like I was back and that I really hadn't missed too much. Like, you know, like no time had passed. So that was really nice. And you know, it's been definitely a lot of hard work to get to where I was, but at the same time, I sort of feel stronger from everything that's gone on.
Yeah. I mean, you and I saw each other, what was it, in June in New York when you were doing the Ice Theater show in New York City. And I was surprised because you were saying you had just gotten back on the ice not that long before that, and you're landing lutzes and flips just fine. Obviously, that was had very little to do with your the foot that you broke. So those were kind of safety jumps, if you will, for you.
Yeah, totally.
You still looked trained. You were doing Stars on Ice and all of that. So that looked very promising. And so where you are right now, as you're looking at your first international of the season versus where you would ideally like to be at this point after the injury, where do you think you are?
You know what? It's sort of like a catch-22. I'm further along than I thought I would be, and now that I'm here, I wish I was even further along. But you know what? When I sat down and I had an idea of where I wanted to be and what I wanted to be doing, I've surpassed what I thought I would be at. But I think it's so easy, like when you're in it, you're like, I should be further along. And when I take a step back, I can really appreciate all of the hard work and, you know, the training that I've done to get to where I am. And I'm definitely on the right track. Do I feel like I'm in like perfect shape for like US championships? No. But I'm really grateful that I had that time to do Stars on Ice because, you know, this isn't going to be my first thing in front of a crowd. I've done a local competition. I've skated at Champs Camp. And I just think that, you know what? I've been skating. This is going to be my 10th year on the Grand Prix series. So I just have a lot of experience, whether it's, you know, good or bad, but I've learned from it all, and I have just really learned to kind of trust that I am experienced and that I can do it when it counts, and that, you know, I have a plan, and not to really get too worried and know that I am on track and following through.
Right. There's a lot of that muscle memory that comes into play, especially for you right now. And you mentioned you've had a few group things with the American team over the past few months. There was Stars on Ice, there was Champs Camp, there was the NBC Olympic shoot, there was a media summit a few days ago. It must
Yes.
have felt great kind of to feel like you were back in the swing of things and also kind of back with everybody, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just felt great. I can tell you from, you know, wishing I was in the media summit and all of that in 2010, and then wishing again I was there in 2014. And, you know, just 8 years later, holy crap. You know what I mean? Like, 8 years makes such a difference. I wasn't the athlete that I am today. I wasn't the person. I wasn't as prepared. I take all of that stuff for what it's worth, but it really, you know, it gets you in that Olympic mindset. And, you know, I do all of that stuff and I come home and I'm like, okay, I really like, I need to get training. And I know I'm in the right mindset because before I would have done anything just to be there and take a few like pictures. But now, like, you know, I'm there and I'm like, okay, this is great, but I wish I was home like practicing. And for me, that just means like, you know, I'm in the right space. I'm doing it for the right reasons. And, you know, I think before it was just to get like a few cute Instagram shots. I mean, I was trying, let me tell you, Jackie, but.
I mean, who doesn't want a few cute Instagram shots, right?
Oh, you're telling me.
Well, time has really flown by. We've seen you prominently on the international scene, like you said, for over a decade now, starting with that incredible junior season that you had where you won Junior Grand Prix Final and then Junior Worlds, both in the same season. Since then, you've won another Junior World title, a number of Grand Prix medals, four continents, a US title, and you've been as high as sixth at Worlds, most recently in 2016. So, looking back over the past 10 years, what were your favorite moments?
I have moments that are my favorite and moments that I'm most grateful for. I would say my second junior world title is one of my favorites, my four continents title, and also my US championship title are also like obviously they're you can't beat winning. Come on. Another great memory for me is my first world championships where I was sixth, and the way I skated at the world championships in Boston is just incredible. And you hear so much about like a world championships at home, and to actually skate in one is you know, it's an experience unlike no other. Moments in my career that I'm very grateful for. One in particular, I'm really grateful for not making the 2014 Olympic team and skating really badly, because that changed my life. It changed my world. I'm really grateful for the way I skated at a nationals in 2006, because that was, you know, I was skating with Kimmy Meisner and I saw her become world champion that year, and I was 11th and junior at nationals. And after that, I was like, I did not work as hard as Kimmy did, and she's world champion, and I know what it takes to be a world champion. So that changed my world. I think I had I felt like I was sort of like walking on eggshells in my whole senior career, trying to like live up to some sort of expectation that I felt like I needed to live up to, that I felt other people had put on me. And in 2014, that all kind of came crashing down, and I was like, I don't know why I'm doing this. And that made me really completely reevaluate my whole skating career. Why was I skating in the first place? Why was I going to these competitions if I felt like I was going to be sick every time I was competing? And then I kind of learned that I actually, when I started skating, loved that, because that sick feeling is the adrenaline that pushes you to be better than you can be in practice. It gives you that extra boost. And I love performing. And at the end of the day, like, the training and the practice is where I get the most joy. It's horrible. There are most days where I'm like, can't wait for this to be over and never do it again. But I'm really, like, honestly, I'm so grateful for it, because I know that, you know, I'm 27 and older than a lot of my competitors, and I have contemplated retiring. So I know what it's like to almost take that away from you. From yourself, I know that I'm really fortunate to make a living and do what I love to do as my job. So I try to make the most out of every day. And that's why I'm so grateful for those disappointments, because I learned from them and I now wear them proudly when before I was embarrassed by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ashley Wagner, your very good friend of yours, of course, says very much the same thing about her disappointment at the 2010 U.S. Championships and how it's really changed her career trajectory and how she thinks about herself and her skating. And so there were a couple of years in that period, like you said, when they were kind of tough. But the 2014-15 season was the year where you really made quite the strong comeback, where you got the silver at Nationals after 2 years off the podium. And I remember that season was a bit crazy, too, because you had a really rough Skate Canada, and then you kind of just clawed your way back, and I just remember...
From oblivion.
Yeah. I mean, I remember going to Nationals that year being like, I have no idea where Adam's going to, what he's going to do at this Nationals. Tell me about...
I think you and everybody there.
I'm sure. Probably including yourself, maybe. Tell me about that season and how you kind of got your groove back there.
So you know what? I started training and I was like, I don't know if I want to be doing this. So then I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm just going to start doing some choreography and teaching a little bit. So that's what I did. And then I just kind of found that I wanted to be skating and doing the skating myself as well. So I was like, okay, I'll keep training. But you know what? It's just sort of like I wasn't dealing with the real issue. I went to the Grand Prix and I just kind of still hadn't dealt with all of that post-Olympic drama. Went in and skated like hot trash. I think I got last at that Skate Canada. I was out of shape. I was skating. I was just out of shape. Was not in shape. I was practicing hard, but you know what? I think when you get to a certain age, like, being in shape is more than going to the gym. It's more than being on the ice. It's where are you mentally? So that's why I say I was out of shape. I then was like, I can do better. My next Grand Prix was in France. And yeah, it was a lot better. I was still hot trash and still out of shape. Still wasn't good. But then I went home. I went to a Thanksgiving dinner at one of my very best friend's houses here in California. And when I was at the dinner, she suggested that I start working with Dennis Petrov, a trainer. Not the
skater. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no relation. And I said, you know what? I have nothing to lose. I think Raphael didn't really know what to expect of me either. And I was like, you know what? I have nothing to lose. If this is my last U.S. championship, I'm going to give it 100%. And whatever the result is, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to go. I'm going to do everything I can to be just great. So I go in and I trained the next 6 weeks like my life depended on it, off of the ice. And do all of that work off of the ice just changed my whole mental attitude about myself. So I did all of that, was skating great, got to the U.S. Championships, and I just felt great. I skated the short program. I did a really nice quad lutz, a triple axel, a triple lutz, triple toe. I was like, that's it. Like, I'm going to win. I got my score. I was like, okay. And then by the end of the night, I was in fifth. And I was like, you know what? They're just, like, the judges are telling me that it's my time has passed. They don't really care. I was like, this is what they do to people when they want them to retire. And I remember thinking that. And then I remember being like, so effing what? Like, who cares? If they want you to do that, then that's their own thing. But if I'm going to end this competition in fifth place, I'm going to be the best fifth place that anyone has ever seen in their entire life. And I remember saying that, and I went out, I skated, and it was just like a career-defining moment. I was in the dirt, and I had clawed my way out in that moment, and you know, like, completely just came through the other end.
Yeah.
And that changed, like, the course of everything. That's when I started to believe in myself and really, like, owned my confidence. And I take that lesson with me every day because I think there's a fear that your best isn't going to be good enough. And I think sometimes we are, like, this self-saboteur. And we're just afraid it won't be good enough. So sometimes we don't try. I know personally, I do that subconsciously. I used to in many different aspects. I'd be worried that my best wouldn't be good enough. And I think some people can relate to that. And I was worried my best wouldn't be good enough. And I think the best thing that ever happened to me was that I was fifth. I told myself I was going to be the best fifth place person ever. I skated amazing. I had like the U.S. championship record free skate score. It was amazing. And then at the end of the event, I ended up second. I skated my best, and I was second. And I was sad for 1 second, and I said, you know what? The silver, this is as good as gold to me. Because that I told myself that, like, the result didn't matter to me. And I take that with me every day, that, like, that feeling of being a champion isn't always winning. And it's like, it was an incredibly liberating moment.
Yeah.
And I think that it's made my competitive career since then more rewarding and more enjoyable.
From that Skate Canada where you're actually second to last, not last, but,
better than I thought.
We're kind of mincing words here with that, but from that Skate Canada where you had that, you know, really terrible result up to the silver at Nationals and then back to the World Championships for the first time in, what, 3 years that was? And getting eighth,
yeah.
That was quite the season for you. Now, fast-forwarding back to this season, and you're preparing for your first big event since the Grand Prix Final, so it's been about 10 months now between competitions. How has your preparation been for this season?
Well, again, I think I've taken that mindset that I had in 2015 going into Nationals and, you know, not really worried what other people are doing. I'm obviously looking around and I'm trying to get as many points as I can, like we were talking about with adding the loop combo here and all of that. But I'm focused more on doing everything that I can to the best of my ability. I see myself at the Olympics. I see myself on the Olympic team. I see myself having 2 great skates at the U.S. Championships. Everything that I'm doing, every event, is something that I'm going to learn from to get me closer to that end goal. And for me, it was like I had my goals for the season and I worked my way backwards. That's just my mindset going into these first events. You know, like you said, it's been 10 months since my last one, and I've done everything I I've could to get prepared and be ready. You know, now it's go time. I can't tell you, like, I'm so excited to go, like, back out and compete because, whew, Jackie, 10 months, come on.
A lifetime for a figure skater, that is for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it is.
Tell me about your programs this week. You are going back to your Coldplay free skate and you know, for me, definitely one of my big highlights of last season was your free skate at Trophée de France. Any changes that we're going to see there? What should we expect with that program?
Well, in that program, like I said before, the only thing that I've really had a problem with is consistently practicing the toe. But what it has done is I've been forced to practice my lutz a little bit more. So I'm going to be doing the quad lutz. My goal is to do two triple triples, a flip loop and a lutz toe, and the two axles in the second half. So I'm trying to, you know, just squeeze out as many points as possible. But, you know, when I'm there, my goal is to look strong and, you know, and put out a really strong showing.
Yeah, excited to see that program again and see that quad lutz back in the mix. What should we expect from your short program?
Okay, so I had this brilliant idea this year that I was going to sing my own short program. And so I brought the idea to my good friend, Benji Schwimmer. And he was like, can you sing? And I was like, yeah, I think so. I mean, like, I sing in the car. And I've really never sung in front of anybody, like, tried to sing. I was like, sure, I think I can. He's like, all right, well, I'll introduce you to my friend who's a producer. So I was introduced to Brady Kerr, a producer out in Norco, California. And so now in my team, I have a coach, a choreographer, and producer.
It's just like Dance Moms.
It is like Dance Moms, and I'm my own mom and the dancer. I went out and I recorded this song. It was a cover. When we saw each other in New York, I skated to this cover of Diamonds.
Yep.
And I was actually looking for like a different version. And
you couldn't find it.
You know, me being me, I was like, oh, I'll just sing my own version. And as soon as I said it, I was like, maybe I'm not joking. We got this other version together and I really liked it. And it was really nice. That mood is still sort of within the same vein as the Coldplay song. And so when I was at Champs Camp, I skated to, you know, my singing and the program is fantastic. Like, Jeff Buttle and Benji Schwimmer both did it. Like, they're the best of the best, so it can only be a great program. But it was more the mood that people felt was too similar to my free skate. So at camp, they said, can you put on your short program from last year, which was Let Me Think About It by Ida Kaur. And I put it on, and as soon as I put it on, Raphael stands up and he leaves, and I'm like, where did he go? And he came back and he's like, I just had to leave because that's it. And I was like, that's it what? He's like, that's what you need to skate to. Nobody else can do that. And so it's funny because I'm going to tell you, there was a lot of pushback for doing that program because at first it was too gay. It was too out there. It was too clubby. People were offended that I had my shoulders exposed. So it was really out there. And then as soon as I took it away from them, they said, oh, can you bring it back? It was, you know what? When I made my programs last year, I know like Ashley Wagner is also doing a greatest hits year. but you know what, girl, you've been skated for 10 years. You've got some greatest hits. You might as well use them. I love that program. I'm still gonna skate to the Diamonds. I still practice it just in case like I want to switch it out because, you know, who doesn't want to hear themselves sing every day? But also I'm gonna skate to it as an exhibition if I don't end up using it in the competitive season this year. But I did go back to my other short program.
So interesting that, unlike most skaters who, when they go back to a program, there's no kind of back pocket program. It seems like there may be a chance we'll see Diamonds as a short program if the mood is right.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think it's very like Stefan Lambiel of me who likes to change his programs. Like I remember and I was like, oh, that's so like interesting. And then now I'm like in that position and I'm like, oh my God, I'm Stefan Lambiel. I mean, I'm like so far from it, but you can dream, right?
Crazily enough, he posted a video of him doing a quad toe, triple toe, like a few weeks ago. Which was,
I know, he's incredible. He was always one of my favorite skaters, so I'm so glad that he's still skating.
Amazing. Well, speaking of baring your shoulders, what should we be expecting with the sleeves issue from you in the short program?
Well, I'm still gonna be dressed in a very sensible mesh shirt. I feel like I've started a trend.
You sure have.
I think I definitely have. And you know what? My body, my choice. It's out there for the world. And I honestly started skating in like the mesh because it's like super comfortable and I get really like overheated when I'm competing. And honestly, because it's a little like risque, I would think more about like, oh my God, they're gonna think that I'm a hussy more than my skating. And then I would skate better and then nobody would say anything. So it's like a distraction. But so I have my shoulders covered this year. I'm not trying to stir the pot.
Shoulders covered, but still lots of mesh to be had, sensible mesh to be had.
Absolutely.
Well, skating fans are excited to have you back in the mix this season. Good travels to you, and good luck at Finlandia this weekend. We'll be watching.
Oh, thanks, Jackie.
And that's all for episode 44 of Ice Talk. My thanks to Nick Zaccardi and Adam Rapon for being on this week. If you missed my very fun interview with Javier Fernandez last week, you can find it in our archives on Apple Podcasts or on icenetwork.com in the fans page. And don't be shy, leave us feedback on Apple Podcasts or tweet at me at RockerSkating or at Ice Network with the hashtag IceTalk. Ice Talk is produced by Kate Sullivan and edited by Mickey Brown. From the Ice Network studios in downtown Manhattan, I'm Jackie Wong. Stay cool, and we'll talk to you again next week.